Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Removal Controversy Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On December 15, 2014, the Supreme Court issued its decision in Dart Cherokee Basin Operating Company, LLC v. Owens. The question in this case was whether a defendant seeking removal to federal court on the basis of diversity jurisdiction was required to include in the notice of removal evidence supporting the minimum amount in controversy required for diversity jurisdiction, or whether it was enough to simply allege the requisite amount in the notice of removal. In an opinion delivered by Justice Ginsburg, the court held by a vote of 5-4 that a defendant's notice of removal on the basis of diversity jurisdiction need not include evidentiary submissions demonstrating that the amount in controversy requirement is met. A plausible allegation that the amount in controversy exceeds the jurisdictional threshold is sufficient. Justice Ginsburg's opinion for the court was joined by Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Breyer, Alito, and Sotomayor. Justice Scalia filed a dissenting opinion, which Justices Kennedy and Kagan joined, and which Justice Thomas joined except for the last sentence. Justice Thomas also filed a dissenting opinion. The judgment of the Tenth Circuit was vacated and the case remanded. To discuss the case, we have Tyler Green, who is an Associate Chief Counsel at the U.S. Chambers Litigation Center. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Green.
All right. Hello, everyone. This is Tyler Green from the U.S. Chamber Litigation Center in Washington, D.C. My thanks to the Federalist Society for the chance to discuss the Supreme Court's opinion in the case of Dart Cherokee Basin Operating Company versus Owens. In a prior podcast for the Society, I discussed this case's background and the party's main arguments. So for purposes of this discussion, I'll assume your general familiarity with that information, either from the earlier podcast or from another similar source. And I'll review that background information only as necessary to discuss the opinion. So here the big question in this case, coming out of oral argument, was whether the court would reach and decide the question presented, or dismiss the case as improvidently granted. And for those who don't closely follow U.S. Supreme Court practice, when the court dismisses a case as improvidently granted, that usually means it found some flaw in the case after it granted cert, usually a jurisdictional flaw, that makes the case a bad vehicle to decide the legal issue in the case. Now, the court issued its opinion here in December of 2014, and the opinion confirms that the court was, in fact, as divided as it seemed to be on which of those two paths was correct. The court ultimately split 5-4 in favor of Dart Cherokee, the petitioner. The majority opinion was written by Justice Ginsburg, and she was joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Breyer, Alito, and Sotomayor. The majority reversed the Tenth Circuit's rule requiring a defendant to include evidence with the removal notice. That was error, the majority said, because the statutory language requires only a short and plain statement of the amount in controversy, thus allowing defendants to introduce evidence on that issue for the first time after a plaintiff challenges any assertion in the removal notice. Now, the four dissenting justices were Justices Scalia, Kennedy, Thomas, and Kagan. Justice Scalia wrote the principal dissent, and Justice Thomas also wrote a separate two-page dissent, which I'll discuss later. The principal dissent agreed with the position advanced in an amicus brief by the group Public Citizen, that a serious vehicle problem exists in this case that should have led the court to dismiss it. The dissenters reasoned that circuit courts have discretion to hear an appeal from an order remanding a CAFA case to state court, that here the Tenth Circuit exercised its discretion not to hear the appeal, that there was no basis from the Tenth Circuit's order to conclude that its discretionary refusal to hear the appeal was improper, and thus that this case does not in fact present the question whether a removing defendant must include evidence with the removal notice, because nothing in the Tenth Circuit's order denying leave to appeal said that they must. So having discussed the opinion's outcome and the top-level arguments on each side, I want to dive just a little bit deeper into each opinion and discuss some of their potential implications. And I'll start by discussing three aspects of the majority opinion. First, the majority's holding that a defendant need only allege the amount in controversy as provided in the removal statute I think, is the fairest reading of the statutory text. And in fact, I think but for the vehicle problem, the court probably would have issued a unanimous opinion on that issue. The second, the majority opinion provides crucial guidance on a separate but related issue that's been percolating in federal court's jurisprudence, and that is whether there is or should be any type of presumption against removal of a case from state court to federal court. Now, federal court's mavens may be familiar with this related dispute. And the answer comes on page 7 of the slip opinion, where the majority clearly states that in the context of CAFA removal, no such presumption should exist. The exact text from Justice Ginsburg's opinion states that there is no anti-removal presumption that attends cases invoking CAFA, which Congress enacted to facilitate adjudication of certain class actions in federal court. And we think this is critical guidance for the federal district and appellate courts. And in fact, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals has already cited this decision in moving away from applying that type of presumption in the CAFA context. Now, to be sure, the majority here expressly reserved and did not decide this question, whether such a presumption against removal exists or applies outside of the CAFA context. But Dart Cherokee's rejection of the presumption in the CAFA context could become an important guidepost for courts that are looking to resolve this issue elsewhere. Now, the third point about the majority opinion. Justice Ginsburg wrote almost 7 full pages, which was nearly half of her opinion, explaining why it was proper for the court to reach and decide the question presented. And she slipped an interesting nugget into her discussion that deserves mentioning here. She starts by discussing the statute governing the Supreme Court's certiorari jurisdiction, which is found in 28 U.S.C. section 1254. That statute gives the court jurisdiction to review, quote, cases in the courts of appeals. That's the operative statutory language. Justice Ginsburg proceeds to find that Dart Cherokee's case was in the Court of Appeals in the Tenth Circuit because of Dart's leave to file application. And she said that the court does have jurisdiction to review what the Court of Appeals did with that application. Now, I think this is potentially a very big and important question. Because the Supreme Court's cert jurisdiction extends to cases in the courts of appeals, defining what exactly constitutes a case in the Court of Appeals seems to create an important limit to the exercise of the court's statutory certiorari jurisdiction. Now, here, Justice Ginsburg did not cite a wealth of authority to support her proposition that an application to a court of appeals for discretionary review constitutes a case in the Court of Appeals. She cited only the statute itself, that was section 1254, and one prior Supreme Court case, a case called Hone versus United States from 1998. Now, it doesn't take much imagination to come up with arguments both for and against why an application for discretionary review constitutes a case in the Court of Appeals. Among other potentially relevant considerations, for example, is a case a proceeding that is fully briefed and decided on the merits? Or must a case seek to provide a judicial remedy? Must it even require the party on the other side to file a brief or to take or advance any affirmative position? Or is it sufficient to constitute a case if one party files what is necessarily a one-sided request to a court seeking permission for some action, for further review or for more briefing or for a particular court-ordered remedy? The majority opinion in this case never really grapples with those issues, but instead could be read to establish, almost in passing really, a potentially wide boundary on what types of federal appellate proceedings the Supreme Court may review under Section 1254. Only one other justice mentioned anything about this issue. That was Justice Thomas, who addressed it in his separate dissent. He said that an application for permission to appeal a remand order is not a case within the meaning of Section 1254, and he disagreed with the majority's reliance on the court's prior opinion in Hone to reach the opposite conclusion. And the fact that no other justice joined with Justice Thomas in this opinion might suggest that the other 8 agree with Justice Ginsburg's apparent rule. But it's surprising to me, at least, to see this issue apparently resolved with so little discussion of it. So finally, I'll end with a few thoughts about Justice Scalia's principal dissent. It really is vintage Justice Scalia. It's witty and pointed and well-reasoned. Among other highlights, it faults the majority for failing to follow a rule that the court previously faulted the Tenth Circuit itself for not following. In an earlier case, the Supreme Court said the Tenth Circuit should not presume, absent a different indication in a district court's opinion that the district court adopted a faulty argument. Yet in Dart Cherokee, according to Justice Scalia, the majority assumes that very problem with the Tenth Circuit's discretionary denial of leave to appeal. There's also a great line on page 7 of the dissent responding to Justice Ginsburg's reliance on the court's decision in Standard Fire versus Knowles as a basis for reaching the merits. Standard Fire, Justice Ginsburg said, came to the Supreme Court in the same procedural posture as this case. And in Standard Fire, no justice disputed the court's jurisdiction to review the Court of Appeals' discretionary denial of review. In response, Justice Scalia offered this mea culpa. He said, "As for my own culpability in overlooking the issue, I must accept that and take it with me to the grave. But its irrelevance to my vote in the present case has been well expressed by Justice Jackson in a passage quoted by the author of today's opinion. I see no reason why I should be consciously wrong today because I was unconsciously wrong yesterday." So that's it. Those are the highlights from the court's opinion in Dart Cherokee. Thanks all for listening, and thanks again to the Federalist Society for providing a forum to discuss these important issues.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.